This is The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. RNIB Talk and Support run telephone social groups for adults with sight loss. There are telebefriending groups which help you socialise by phone for friendship and support, or you can share your passion for books and reading by taking part in a telephone book club. We'll tell you how you can take part in your own telephone social group later on in the show. But for now, let's listen in to our telephone book group on RNIB Connect Radio. Your facilitator today is Iona.
Hello, I'm Iona, and I'm the facilitator of this group today. And here's who will be taking part.
Hello there. My name is Alan. I'm 65, and I live in Epping Forest. I've been blind since birth, and I have macular dystrophy of the Stargardt type. I love books, I love reading, I love audiobooks. Crime and travel are my favourite genre.
Hello, I'm Peggy. I'm 80. I'm from Scotland, but now I live in West Wales. I have macular degeneration. I've always loved reading. I love anything and everything. I read all sorts of books, and always have.
Hello, I'm David. I'm from Chester, and I'm 57 years old. I went blind when I was 6 months old, and I have very badly scarred retinas. As far as reading goes, I do like a lot of horror fiction. I like some crime fiction, and I like a lot of classics.
Hello, I'm Supriya. I come from Aldershot, and I'm 42. And I have been blind since I was about 2 years old, and I had a condition called retinoblastoma, which is a tumour in the eyes. I like reading classics and any other books, mainly historical fiction, romantic fiction, and I'll try anything once.
Hi, I'm called Peter, and I live in Grays, Essex. I'm 91. If you pardon my stammer, by the way, I have a wide taste in books, adventure stories. I've been reading Terry Pratchett recently.
Hi, I'm Ushma. I'm over 21 and I'm from Eastcote in Middlesex. I've been blind since birth and I'm wheelchair bound due to brittle bones. I absolutely love reading. I got a degree and a master's in Shakespeare. I love a little bit of all sorts really, including the classics, historical fiction and some light comedy as well.
I can see that we're all sort of very, very wide-ranging in our reading tastes, so it'll be very interesting to get onto the theme of this session today. And as you probably know, the theme is books that have inspired us, possibly a book that's been very special in your life. And I know you've had a chance to think about this. David, shall we start with you? Have you got a special book that springs to mind?
Yes. When I was 12 years old, Radio 4 did a serialisation of Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre. And I discussed it with my mother, and she said, well, listen to it if you like, and if you do, you'll probably want to read the book. And I did. I duly listened to it, and I did want to read the book, and I think that's the book, even now, 45 years later, that's had the biggest impact on me of all the books I've ever read, simply because It seemed to have everything. There was a touch of the gothic about it. It was romantic. It appealed to my slightly sentimental nature, and it also scared me a bit. And I'm really glad that I took my mother's advice and read the book after I'd listened to the classic serial.
Let's have a listen to the book.
There was no possibility of taking a walk that day. We had been wandering, indeed, in the leafless shrubbery an hour in the morning. But since dinner, Mrs. Reed, when there was no company, dined early, the cold winter wind had brought with it clouds so sombre and a rain so penetrating that further outdoor exercise was now out of the question. I was glad of it. I never liked long walks, especially on chilly afternoons.
Has anyone else read Jane Eyre?
Yes, many times.
I've
seen it.
I've read Jane Eyre.
I've read Jane Eyre.
Did you enjoy it, Ushma?
Yes, I did. I absolutely loved it. I think because
Charlotte Bronte was sort of very much ahead of her time, and I think obviously you've got the story of this feisty yet sort of vulnerable heroine, you know, sort of carving out a bit of a niche for herself, really, and becoming a governess. She's quite unconventional as well. She sort of reminds me of Beatrice in Much Ado. And her sort of, I like the sort of chemistry she has with Rochester as well.
At first I thought it was going to be, sort of like a lot of books are, sort of a story of a repressed orphan who sometime, you know, somehow managed to make a life for herself. But there turned out to be an awful lot more to it than that.
And that book has stayed with you all your life?
Absolutely, yes. If somebody said to me, you can only ever have one book and not read any more, I would have to choose that one.
Yes, good choice.
I hope that never happens.
So that's your desert island book.
That's my desert island book, yeah.
Oh, this is Peggy. I can't think of anything worse than not being able to read lots and lots of books.
No.
That's true.
What does Bessie say I've done? I asked. Jane, I don't like cavillers or questioners. Besides, there is something truly forbidding in a child taking up her elders in that manner. Be seated somewhere, and until you can speak pleasantly, remain silent.
Alan, how about you? What is your favourite book of time?
I've chosen a book outside of my genre that I mentioned earlier. I've chosen a book not from the crime thriller catalogue or the travel catalogue.
Okay.
I've chosen a book that was written over 100 years ago, I believe in the 1890s, and it's called The Diary of Nobody.
By
George and Whedon Grossmith. I read it, or listen to it rather, at least once a year. It cheers me up. It really, all it is, it's such a simple story. It's not a long book. I think the audio version is only about 4 hours. Basically what it's about, Iona, is a family, the Pooter family, Charles Pooter, head of house, and his family living in what's regarded as a suburb, but it's Holloway in London. I mean, I don't regard Holloway as a suburb of London now. It's very much a business part of North London. But in the Victorian time, when this was written, it was regarded as a suburb. And it's a gentle satire, very understated humour about a lower middle class family. He's a clerk in the city, and really it's about their life. And running in the background is obviously a social commentary of the period, which is just before Victoria died. It's fantastic humour. It makes me laugh out loud at times. It brings a smile to my face without realising I'm smiling while I'm listening. That's why I read it once a year, because it really lifts the spirits. It cheers me up. It also proves to me that the best laid plans of man can go wrong. I mean, he's trying to... everything he does, Charles Pooter, for himself and his family, it tends to go wrong, and sometimes... acutely embarrassing. I mean, toe-curlingly embarrassing. You know, from dealing with tradesmen like the butcher and the ironmonger, from being invited to the guild hall and having a dance with his wife Carrie on the dance floor. But I won't spoil it for people. But it's the humour in it is running right through it. And of course, tragedy is not far from humour, or embarrassment is never too far from humour. Which as a blind person you can really relate to, because we get into some situations that are not funny at the time, but they're funny on reflection.
Yeah.
I thoroughly recommend this book. As I said, I don't think you'll be disappointed. It doesn't really fit in any genre. I think it started life in Punch magazine in 1888, and it was so popular that it was then turned into this book, which has stood the test of time. And if a book written in the 1890s can still make you smile and laugh in the 21st century, I think that says a lot for the writing, doesn't it?
Let's have a listen to the book as available from RNIB.
April the 3rd. Tradesman called for custom, and I promised Farmerson, the ironmonger, to give him a turn if I wanted any nails or tools. By the by, that reminds me, there's no key to our bedroom door. And the bells must be seen to. The parlour bell is broken, and the front door rings up in the servant's bedroom, which is ridiculous. Dear friend Going dropped in, but wouldn't stay, saying there was an infernal smell of paint. April the 4th. Tradesman still calling. Carrie being out, I arranged to deal with Horwin, who seemed a civil butcher with a nice clean shop. Ordered a shoulder of mutton for tomorrow to give him a trial. Carrie arranged with Borsett, the butter man, and ordered a pound of fresh butter, and a pound and a half of salt ditto for kitchen, and a shilling's worth of eggs. In the evening, Cummings unexpectedly dropped in to show me a meerschaum pipe he'd won in a raffle in the city, and told me to handle it carefully, as it would spoil the colouring if the hand was moist. He said he wouldn't stay, as he didn't care much for the smell of the paint, and fell over the scraper as he went out. Must get the scraper removed, or else I shall get into a scrape. I don't often make jokes.
That book is, of course, available from RNIB Talking Books. Now let's rejoin the conversation on the book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Alan. Your enthusiasm really shone through there.
I mean, Jane Eyre is a fantastic pick by David. I love Jane Eyre. But I think if on my desert island, Charles Pooter and his family and The Diary of a Nobody is coming with me.
Peggy, over to you. What is your favourite book?
I find this very difficult because I've read so many books throughout my life. One that, the first book that ever made a real impact on me, I think, was one I read as a child, and that was Charles Kingsley's The Water Babies.
Yeah. Oh.
And I broke my heart over all these little boys getting sent up the chimneys. And,
yeah.
And I read and reread that. And I actually might quite like to read it again now as an adult and see what effect it had on me now.
As for chimney sweeping, and being hungry, and being beaten, he took all that for the way of the world, like the rain and snow and thunder, and stood manfully with his back to it till it was over, as the old donkey did to a hailstorm, and then shook his ears and was as jolly as ever, and thought of the fine times coming, when he would be a man and a master sweep, and sit in the public house with a quart of beer and a long pipe, and play cards for silver money, and wear velveteens and ankle jacks, and keep a white bulldog with one grey ear, and carry her puppies in his pocket, just like a man. And he would have apprentices, one, two, three, if he could. How he would bully them and knock them about, just as his master did to him, and make them carry home the soot sacks while he rode before them on his donkey.
Adult books, probably the first one I remember is Pride and Prejudice, which I read first in my teens and have read again several times. And I don't honestly think there's one single book that has impacted on my life. One that I would take to Desert Island would be the collected Brother Cadfile stories by Ellis Peter.
Mm.
I love them.
Very good.
A sort of compendium of them would keep me going quite happily. I don't mind. They are books that I have read and reread. But I just love books. Ever since I was a child, I've read anything and everything.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you said, and also, Alan said also, about rereading a book that you really enjoyed. How important is it to revisit your favourite books, do you think?
I quite like to do it occasionally. I only do it occasionally because I suppose most people do. I have a huge backlog of books that I really still want to read.
Mm.
But I do like every so often I pick up. The other one that I pick up and reread occasionally is the Northern Lights trilogy by Philip Pullen.
Oh, that is absolutely incredible, that book.
That trilogy of books, yeah. Fabulous, and I have reread, I think I've read that now, all three of them about three times. Never get bored with them.
I think the thing about reading a book maybe a second time or picking it up, you know, even after 2 or 3 years, I think being part of a book group has really prompted me in that direction because you hear a person's opinion, another person's opinion on the book you've read, and it gives you a different slant. You know, they interpret the book slightly differently to you have first time around.
Yeah.
And I've revisited a book because of something... a group member, a book group member,
has spoken about and revisited and said, oh, I missed that the first time round.
I think one of the joys of the book groups is that they introduce you to different authors, people that you haven't read before.
Take you out of your comfort zone, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other thing about it, David here, the other thing about that is if you read books that are a series of books, like in my case, the Herries Chronicles by Hugh Walpole, when I finished the final book of that, Vanessa, I actually felt a palpable sense of loss. And I knew perfectly well that I would reread them, but the first time was always the best, even though the next time would be really good as well.
Peggy, again, I'm reading the latest Ian Rankin Rebus book, which I was given for Christmas, and I'm thinking, I wonder if there's going to be any more after this. The same, I was sad when Terry Pratchett died because I loved his stuff as well.
This is Ishma here. I talking to Terry Pratchett, I had the opportunity to read the Weird Sisters. It was the play, obviously not the novel, but I have a lot of admiration for his writing. He's very talented.
Terry Pratchett is one of those authors that I've tried very hard to appreciate. And in many ways, I wish I could, because a lot of people that I know love Terry Pratchett. I never really have been able to appreciate him.
The Discworld books are probably the easiest to get along with. I have read some of his other stuff, which was a bit not so easy, but the Discworld, you get, it's very much a satirical view of this world, really. If you look at it, as satire rather than just a story, because a lot of the characters you think, oh, that's based on so-and-so. A lot of political and social comment in it disguised as something from another world.
A kid could open those cuffs, and while Snoutley here keeps a very clean jail, he's completely draws at being a guard, said Vimes. This place needs shaken up. He leaned forward, knuckles on the captain's desk, and his face a few inches from the trembling moustache and the milky eyes. $25, or I walk out that door, he said. It was probably a phrase never ever said before by any prisoner anywhere on any world. $25, murmured Tilden, hypnotized. And a rank will be sergeant at arms, said Vimes. Not sergeant. I'm not going to be given orders by the likes of Nock.
Over to you, Peter.
Yes. I started as a child. I learned to have a love of books, mainly because I think now, in hindsight, because I had a bad stammer, as you probably notice, I still have a bit. And so I hid myself in books, and I made my social set in fictional people. And I started with Jess William. Yes, Richard Thompson, yes. And I loved those books. I devoured them as they came in from the library. And I actually felt myself as a member of the gang, really.
In the matter of sweets, William frankly upheld the superiority of quantity over quality. Moreover, he knew every sweet shop within a 2-mile radius of his home, whose proprietor added an extra sweet after the scale had descended, and he patronized these shops exclusively. With solemn face and eager eye, he always watched the process of weighing, and stingy shops were known and banned by him.
Do you think they've stood the test of time?
Oh, I do, yes. I think there are kind of classics that will never age. Mm. The one which really was a turning point was The Wind in the Willows.
Oh, lovely book.
Which I still love.
Wonderful book. Wind in the Willows was about the class system.
Yes.
Played out with these wonderful woodland animals.
Very clever.
Especially Terry Toad Hall. I mean, he was, you know.
He's delicious, isn't he, Ishmael? He's absolutely, he's sort of very, you can't help but like him.
No, that's right.
And Moley.
Yes, Mowley, poor little Mowley.
David here, Toad always reminds me a little bit of Bertie Wooster.
Very good comparison,
Smart piece of work that, he remarked to himself, chuckling. Brain against brute force. Brain came out on the top, as it's bound to do. Poor old Ratty. My, won't he catch it when Badger gets back? A worthy fellow, Ratty, with many good qualities, but very little intelligence, and absolutely no education. I must take him in hand some day and see if I can make something of him.
Thank you very much, Peter. It just shows how some books just endure, don't they, over decades and decades.
Time.
You know, I would take all the books that people have mentioned, you know, the Jane Eyre, The Pride and Prejudice, Jane Eyre, I would take all of them with the diary. I would take them all on my desert island. Can I have them?
No, you wouldn't be allowed to, though.
One book other than the Bible and the Shakespeare.
Shakespeare, I loved, this is Peggy again, I loved Shakespeare at school because we did the plays. I had a wonderful English teacher and they let us read them as plays and read and each of us as a character. Reading Shakespeare I always found very difficult. But I loved being Portia.
Yeah. I loved being Macduff.
Yeah. I always wanted to be Puck.
With RNIB Talk and Support, you're listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. And we'll have more after this.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Would you like to chat over the telephone with a group of like-minded people? RNIB's award-winning telephone social groups are small, friendly and lots of fun. A great way of making new friends and a chance to socialise without leaving the comfort of your home. To join, telephone RNIB Talk and Support on 0845 330 3723 or email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk. RNIB is a membership organisation. To join, visit rnib.org.uk/membership.
And now more from the book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Supriya, over to you.
Like Peggy, I've read books all my life or have been read to by my mum, dad, granddad, anybody who can read, even my friends who have been at school to read me stuff. And my one book I read again and again, every few years I go back to it and read it, is Pride and Prejudice. I think my mum read it to me when I was 13 or 14. I love that book because it has the richness of language, it has a lovely romantic story, it has a happy ending, brilliant characters that stick in your mind forever, and a heroine that's spirited and intelligent, and a hero that's handsome and brave and clever. What more can you ask from a book?
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. However little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first entering a neighbourhood, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered as the rightful property of some one or other of their daughters.
But other books, I've read all of Jane Austen's books. I like most of her books. My other favourite author is George Eliot. I'm on a mission to read all her books. Her books, I don't mind, they're quite long, and, you know, 40 hours of audio or 30-odd hours of audio. I absolutely love it. I never get bored. I do miss it when it ends. It's like a sense of loss. It's really, really good. Whereas the modern books, I start reading and I think, it does go on a bit. other than the story, there's nothing really to hold the books up these days. George Eliot, I used to like Thomas Hardy. We did that for English literature. So I got his books, and I actually got some for myself and read quite a few of his books. There are lots of books of his I haven't read, so I tend to remedy that at some point. I went through a phase of reading Catherine Cookson, but it got a bit samey after a while, so I stopped. One of the other authors I've recently discovered last few years is Audrey Howard. I really like her stories. So they're all set about 100 odd years ago or maybe more. And it's nice to learn about life as it used to be and the culture. And they always have a lovely story as well, mainly about like family sagas and so on. I like reading books set in other countries, in other times, Roman times. I've read books set in foreign countries, anything that tells me about facts of that country, the culture as it used to be hundreds of thousands of years ago, that is really good.
Thank you, Supriya. Last but not least, Ushma.
Okay, well, I wasn't quite sure which book to choose. I think the book, sort of one of the books that really, really sticks out for me from childhood would be The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. It was the Chronicles of Narnia. Obviously, it's the second book. For some reason, that was the first of the Chronicles I read, as it were. But the thing that sort of struck me about that book, you've sort of got, like, characters who are, you've got clear sort of dimensions, you know, you've got the goodies and the baddies. But I think there are a lot of lessons you could learn from that book, too. But generally, I absolutely love that book. Aslan, I think, is my favourite character.
But what are you? Said the Queen again. Are you a great overgrown dwarf that has cut off its beard? No, Your Majesty, said Edmund. I never had a beard. I'm a boy. A boy? Said she. Do you mean you are a son of Adam? Edmund stood still, saying nothing. He was too confused by this time to understand what the question meant. I see you are an idiot, whatever else you may be, said the Queen.
Now, let's see, from adulthood, I think the book that really, really made an impact on me was Hard Times by Charles Dickens.
Oh, wonderful book.
It is, isn't it? I came across it when I was studying at uni, and I hadn't read Dickens for a very, very long time, and I think that stayed with me because it reconnected me with Dickens. I'm sure you're all probably quite familiar with the story, but it's absolutely hilarious. Beneath the sort of hilarity, though, is this sort of social commentary. It's a Condition of England novel, and it's basically about this, the grab grind, sort of the value, you know, they're all sort of number crunches. It's set in Coketown, and we sort of see the industry bowing to the values of hope and charity, I guess is the best way to sum it up. And I think the thing that sort of struck me is obviously you've got the names of every character sort of being quite significant. You've got what was it, Blustering Bounderby, that sort of says it all, and you've got the sort of the very aptly named heavy sort of Gradgrind, and I think the characters are incredibly well drawn. And I think they're sort of definitely a message again at the heart of that book, but it's very well, I think, concealed with the sort of biting humour.
Now, what I want is facts. Teach these boys and girls nothing but facts. Facts alone are wanted in life. Plant nothing else and root out everything else. You can only form the minds of reasoning animals upon facts. Nothing else will ever be of any service to them. This is the principle on which I bring up my own children. And this is the principle on which I bring up these children. Stick to facts, sir.
That's one of the Dickens that I haven't actually read. So I shall have to add that to my long list of books I want to read.
It's one of those I definitely, definitely recommend reading. I've read it, I think, twice. It's one of those books that I could, I guess, with all Dickens, you could never really get tired of reading Dickens. I think it's the character of Stephen Blackpool that makes me cry every single time when I read that book, because he's almost, I wouldn't quite say a minor hero, but he kind of is because of what, you know, again, the values that he stands for, and I think the fact that he's sort of a very stark reminder of how it, you know, what it is that the industrial system does to the workers, and I just find that very sad and very moving.
That's David here. There's one thing that I really like about Dickens, the fact that he has a really good support cast. Apart from his heroes, I mean, my particular favourite is in David Copperfield is Wilkins Micawber. He's good-hearted, but he's hapless. He just really does make me laugh.
Mm. Procrastination is the thief of time.
You've got to love him, even though he's inept, haven't you?
Yeah.
But he does actually, in the end, he does come good, doesn't he? He goes to Australia and becomes a magistrate.
Yes.
Yeah.
After various trials and tribulations.
Yes. Which makes you wonder how strict they are in Australia in their legal system.
Let's not go there.
No, let's not go there, no.
Well, it's been fascinating listening to your inspiring books.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that many of the books that have been chosen have been ones that you've read in childhood and that have lasted all through your lives to date.
Yes.
And sort of kept that inspiration. I was actually wondering, what is the first talking book that you read, that you remember?
The first talking book I ever read was, I went to Worcester College for the Blind, mm-hmm. and they had a limited selection of talking books. And the first one I ever read was by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It was The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yes.
I said earlier on that I wasn't a huge fan of crime fiction, but I do love the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Same here. I don't love crime fiction.
Yeah.
I don't have to. I do for book clubs and things, but Sherlock Holmes is in a category by itself. I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I read that in childhood as well. I was 15.
But I was 13 when I first read that, and
yeah.
I was absolutely, I mean, I was hooked. I've been hooked on the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Have you read the whole lot, the 60 stories and the
I have read the entire canon, yes.
Yes, yes, have I.
To Sherlock Holmes, she's always the woman. I've seldom heard him mention her under any other name. In his eyes, she eclipses and predominates the whole of her sex. It was not that he felt any emotion akin to love for Irene Adler. All emotions, and that one particularly, were abhorrent to his cold, precise, but admirably balanced mind. He was, I take it, the most perfect reasoning and observing machine that the world has seen.
A clip from one of the many Sherlock Holmes books available from RNIB Talking Books. We'll have more from the book group in a moment, but just a reminder that all the books you heard on today's show are available from RNIB. They were Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, The Diary of a Nobody by George and Whedon Grossmith, The Water Babies by Charles Kingsley, Night Watch by Terry Pratchett, Just William by Richmal Crompton, The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis, Hard Times by Charles Dickens, and The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Arthur Conan Doyle. For more information on these books and how to get them from RNIB on CD, on USB stick, or to download them via RNIB Overdrive, head to www.rnib.org.uk. Now let's join the conversation once more with the book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Any other memories of the first talking book?
When I first had my talking books from the RNIB, it was the big old, and many of you remember them, the big old players with the sort of like 8-track cassettes, like the...
I remember
huge
those.
Great things they were.
Ginormous, not the least bit portable.
I got further than that, I think in the late 60s, they were big disc. And you played it like you would play a record.
The cassettes must have been after that, then.
The cassettes came after the big cassette with the hole in the middle.
Yeah,
I think they stored them through the hole in the middle. We're very lucky today.
Oh, so much better. So much easier.
I sort of vaguely remember this big disc arriving and the player to play on. And I wasn't fully adjusting to my blindness at the time, and this was yet another, validation or consolidation that I was going to be a blind person all my life. along with learning Braille and things. And I seem to remember a book, Agatha Christie, the controversial one that I think is known now as And Then There Were None. You know, the one that, I won't go into what that book was originally.
No, not the original title.
But I remember that, and then as a obnoxious sort of teenager going into my early 20s, still rebelling a bit, I remember adventure books written by Alistair MacLean. You know, Sons of Navarone, Where Eagles Dare, you know, books of that adventure nature. So we're one step up from getting the eagle as a comic, if you like, you know. I suppose all of us would say this. Oh, I think reading is the thing I'm... reading conveniently is the thing I miss most in my life. I think reading is compelling. I think if you were in Greasy Joe's cast and you could see fully, if there was nothing to read or nothing to cast your eyes on, like a newspaper or a paperback, I think you would read the ingredients on a sauce bottle. Isn't that compelling?
Yes.
We have to find alternatives, and thankfully today, you know, you've got downloads, you've got talking books, which are magnificent. There's so much more choice, and the more commercial audiobooks become to a wider market, the better it is for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, as David here, I think we're in a situation at the moment that's better than it ever has been before in terms of access to books.
Yeah.
I remember walking into Tesco's with a friend of mine once, and she just looked across, oh, they've got the new Josephine Cox, and I used to think, wouldn't it be cool just to be able to do that and pick up a book?
I think the texture of a printed book, the smell of a printed book, my wife reads avidly, she's sighted, and funny enough, Peter mentions Wind in the Willows, I bought her a 1932 edition of Wind in the Willows. And it's fantastic. It was an old book bought in an antiquarian bookshop in London. And just to feel that book, have it in my hand, although I couldn't see it, and I certainly couldn't read it, well, not without technology, you know, just to flip open a book on a train and flip open a paper and read it, that's what we can't do. But as David said, you know, I'm very, very grateful for the advancements of talking books in particular, but also all the other formats. You just download a book now. For sheer enjoyment and taking in the books, especially the way they're written now, that it's almost an actor or an actress interpretation of a book. I think all of us probably have our favourite readers as well as our favourite authors. I'm no exception. But reading Braille is so private. So things like bank statements, short magazines. I have a monthly magazine that comes from Scotland every week. I couldn't be without it. And Braille is so personal and private because I read and write Braille. So I do quite a lot of public speaking, and I write my presentations in Braille. I have it sort of under the table, and no one knows it's an aid memoir. You know, no one knows I'm being prompted by Braille. I read Braille under the bedclothes. My wife hates that, by the way, because you've got to lift the duvet up to turn the page.
I do that sometimes.
Can you relate to that?
Well, when my arm's getting cold, I just put the
Yeah. Oh, Braille is fantastic. Unfortunately, Iona, it's not taught to enough people now because technology has taken over. I mean, I use technology. I use all Apple devices and stuff. I use anything that's going to improve my practical function. But I wouldn't do without this system that's over 250 years old, which is Braille.
Yeah, it's really my favourite way to listen to talking books. Oddly enough, and it's something that sighted people probably can't do easily, is when you're doing exercises in the gym. If you're on an exercise bike or a running machine, you still have your talking book on. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I can listen to a book and that's what I do. Listen to a book. I never actually sit and listen to a book. I'm actually doing something. The only time I listen and only listen is when I go to bed.
Things like the ironing.
That's it, yeah. Any housework except hoovering, obviously, you can listen to a book.
But I miss going into a bookshop and picking up books and looking through them and, you know, reading a wee bit to see what you're going to read, which that is one thing I do miss.
That would be nice.
Touché.
Thank you. Well, it's been an absolutely fascinating discussion. I'm afraid the time is
getting the worst of us. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for your insightful comments and very interesting recommendations. Look forward very much to hopefully meeting you again. Yeah. Let's hope our paths cross again.
Well,
hope
to everyone again.
All the very best.
Thank you very much,
to
everyone.
Happy
meeting.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah,
happy
meeting.
Happy
meeting.
Happy meeting.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy meeting. Bye.
Bye.
Someone has left the conference. 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 Someone has left the conference.
To join a group, either telebefriending or a telephone book club, please email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk or call one of the two following numbers: 0845 330 3723 or 0207 391 2218. Thanks to RNIB Talk and Support. You've been listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio.